NPR Music presents this tribute to saxophonist Illinois Jacquette. He passed away in 2004 at the age of 82.
That was the ravenous man out there at the time. He was a big pop star.
Oh, he has a tremendous influence on the young tenor players. He's recognized as one of the greats.
If you tried to play Flying Home, if you didn't play those two courses, you didn't play Flying Home. That was just it.
When you're playing music, that's when you are really free, because now you can play what you feel. You do what you want to do.
In 1942, the tenor saxophone was king, and the king of the tenor was a 19-year-old phenomenon born in Louisiana and raised in Houston, Texas. He burst on the scene with the Lionel Hampton Orchestra and created a solo on this tune, Flying Home. It became one of the most famous, revered solos in jazz history, so much so that it opened up a whole new school of tenor playing. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we pay tribute to tenor saxophonist and bandleader Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquette. A unique popular phenomenon in jazz, from the 1940s right up to the present, Illinois' tenor solos reign supreme.
People who are interested in how jazz is jazz should listen to the way he constructs solos.
Jazz radio personality Bob Porter produced Illinois Jacquette's 1988 big band record, Jacquette's Got It.
He's a master of construction. He really knows how to build a solo to a peak. And there are a few people in the history of the music, Louis Armstrong perhaps, who do that as well as he does, regardless of instrument.
This is Illinois' solo on Mordido, recorded live in 1944. Illinois is also a master of ballads. He cuts straight to the heart. Dan Morgenstern, director of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey.
He's a player who has a very broad range of expression, and he's a wonderful ballad player. He's got that Herschel Evans, Texas thing. He's really a very soulful musician.
The passion Illinois puts into his playing is equally apparent in his work as a bandleader. Bob Porter.
He likes to practice, you know. He works very hard, and this band has probably rehearsed more than any band in history. He works them real hard. And so when he comes out and performs in public, he lets it all hang out. He doesn't hold anything back.
Where did that feeling for leading big bands come from? That sensitivity to a ballad. That gift for constructing a rousing, distinctive solo. It began in Broussard, Louisiana, where Illinois Jacquette was born on October 31st, 1922.
My mother was American Indian, and it was sort of like the Iroquois. The lady that delivered me, she came from DuSable High School, and she was a nurse in Chicago. They decided that they would call me Illinois because of the Indian part of me. Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquet. That was the Christian name. That's the way they pronounce it in French.
When he was 6 months old, the family moved to Houston. Like Lester Young, Oscar Pettiford, Eddie Durham, and other jazz pioneers, Jacquette came from a musical family.
My dad played the bass violin, and he also played the concert violin. People were trying to progress in the music, and they were trying to get it together in a form where they could play together. So they had big bands, and my father had one of those bands that he led in Texas. His name was Gilbert Jacquet.
His mother, Maggie, also shared her love of music with her youngest child.
My mother was a big blues lover, so I was very into that. They would have picnics, and there was always a gang out there with a guitar and singing, you know, those old road blues, hobos hopping on trains, and he had a guitar, maybe a tooth loose in his mouth hanging. All that was part of the low-down, gut bucket, real blues. And then you start to hear these other big guys like T-Bone Walker, you know, the real dressed-up blues, but it's the same feeling, you know.
No question about it. That feeling for the blues found its way into Illinois' music. Blues from Louisiana is a composition Illinois recorded for his 1988 big band record. From Louisiana, from Illinois Jacquette's 1988 album, Jacquette's Got It. The spotlight shone early on Illinois Jacquette. He was the baby of the family, and with his three older brothers, was part of a tap dancing team called the Four Jacquette Brothers. When he was eight, he won first prize tap dancing in front of the great Cab Calloway.
Cab was so flashy, and oh my goodness, he dressed so Marvis, the band coming from the east and down there in Texas. That was like looking at God. And that was encouraged me to really want to be somebody like that on the stage, you know, Cab Calloway.
Illinois was not only destined to become an entertainer, but also to spend most of his life in a big band.
My father used to have rehearsals in our home, and I guess they would put the drummer in the toilet, the saxophones in the kitchen, and trumpets would be in the living room. They'd be all over the house. And I was trying to keep up with him, running all over the place.
When he went to hear his father's band play, he would also hear the great Black Territory bands that came through town.
I grew up hearing all kind of music, and most of these sounds are coming from Black people. And when I would hear the white people play, it would be more Tobacco Road type music, hillbilly and Western music. Now I knew there was two musics, different kind of music. But jazz was the music that I preferred hearing, because that was something that could progress from the blues into jazz.
I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to tenor saxophonist and bandleader Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquet. Illinois started playing his own jazz on drums and B-flat soprano saxophone. During his third year at Houston's Phyllis Wheatley High School, his father gave him some money to buy an alto saxophone.
I got so good enough to play in with my brothers. Russell played trumpet, and he played it well. And Linton played drums and sang, and he did well with that. And my oldest brother played the tenor saxophone, which started me out first on saxophone.
Illinois' talent didn't go unnoticed. Although his mother insisted on a midnight curfew, he started his first professional work in local bands while he was still in high school. Bob Porter.
He played with a legendary band led by trombonist vocalist Milt Larkin. And his sidekicks in that band included Eddie Cleanhead Vincent and Arnett Cobb, and a fine tenor player who went all the way through school with Illinois named Tom Archia. And those people were perhaps as much an influence on him as anything else.
Philadelphia-born pianist-arranger Bill Doggett, who would work with Illinois' small groups in the 1940s, first heard the young saxophonist playing alto in Milt Larkin's Territory Band.
His playing was just so melodic, just so beautiful at the time. We hadn't heard anybody play alto like Illinois played it. Illinois had that Texas type of sound, which was really different from the sound that we were playing in the North, because they had that blues influence. They had that feeling of bending notes. So when we played, we just hit our notes solid right on the head. and they bent their notes, which gave them more of a feeling.
One night, something happened that would change his life dramatically.
The Count Basie Band came to Houston to play a dance at the Pilgrim Auditorium. And I saw them set up. I saw Lester Young for the first time. I saw Herschel Evans, who was from Temple, Texas. He had big sound, big, beautiful sound on saxophone. So he was now in Count Basie's band. And I heard that band, and I said, wow. I said, this band is like coming from heaven.
Jacquet knew it was time to strike out from Houston. He was lured to Basie's home base, Kansas City, where he jammed with Charlie Parker. Next, he headed west to Los Angeles with brother Russell and his sister Mary. Nat King Cole's trio was the talk of the town at the time. The pianist invited Jacquet to play with him at a Labor Day jam session at the Black Musicians Union. The rhythm section was anybody's dream team. Jimmy Blanton on bass, Charlie Christian on guitar, Big Sid Catlett on drums, and Nat King Cole on piano.
When I started playing with them, I said, what is happening to me? It felt like God was playing my horn and I was just listening.
In 1942, Jack had played tenor sax with Nat Cole on Pro Ski.
Thank you.
Another new arrival in L.A. around this time was vibraphonist Lionel Hampton, who just left Benny Goodman and was getting ready to form his own band. Nat invited Lionel to jam with him in Illinois one night. Hamp was so taken with the young saxophonist that he offered him a job. There was just one condition.
He said, providing if you would change and play what you play on alto, play that on the tenor saxophone, I can make you a star in the band, give you feature solos. And after jamming with Charlie Parker and people like that, I think this man must be crazy. Change!
But a job was a job, and Jacquette considered the proposal overnight.
And the next day I told him, I said, yeah. It was a hard decision, though. It was not easy to change from the alto to the tenor, although they had two saxophones, but they're two different sizes. But I could play it, you know, and if I wanted a job, it was time to play it. So I joined Hampton Band, 1940, on tenor.
So now, what to do with the big tenor saxophone that was almost as big as Illinois? Illinois thought back to the Texas tenors whose music he'd grown up with. Herschel Evans, Buddy Tate, Bud Johnson, and Arnett Cobb.
Texas tenor was sort of like the bullfight. You had to be strong, and you had to be outstanding to become a soloist in the big bands in Texas. The Texas tenor was sort of like the guys that had big tones. So Herschel Evans had a big sound. Buddy Tate had a big sound. Bud Johnson had a big sound. And I came from hearing their sound. They were all before me, but I respected them and I knew what it was all about. You know, I said, oh, you got to have a big sound if you want to be a star in a band.
Now, the altoist, who had enjoyed Charlie Parker's praise in Kansas City, had a new challenge.
To adjust was not easy. So people would come up and tell me with the Hampton Band, say, oh, you sound like Lester Young tonight. Now, you sound like Herschel. I said, now, wait a minute. I'm in trouble here. I got to get a sound of my own here. So I started working on that.
The two-year recording band from 1940 to 1942 gave Jacquette the chance to get his playing together. In 1942, the ban was lifted. Illinois Jacquette was just 19 years old.
So now we're going to record for Decca Records. And just when I got up to go and take my solo and Flying Home, Marshall Rawl, who was the straw boss in the band, and he was a hell of a saxophonist and lead man. We respected him. And I got up to go to the microphone. I didn't know what I was going to play. And Marshall Rawl reached over and said, go for yourself. Go for myself? What do I have to go for myself? But I had to create something. And that's when I created that solo. I'm Flying Home.
Tenor saxophone player and band leader, Frank Foster.
The first chorus of Illinois solo, that was so musical. It swung, it was soulful. It seemed as though every note was planned in advance. That solo was so great.
The second chorus, Jacquette's driving repetition of the B-flat drove audiences into even more of a frenzy. ¶¶
big, big record, immediately. Originally, when the session was cut, Milt Gabler had heard the band play it at the Apollo Theater, and it was running along, much too long for 10-inch 78, whose practical limitations were a little over 3 minutes. They cut it back, and they cut it back, and they cut it back, and what they cut back were the contributions of Lionel Hampton, who was the leader of the band. And they made sure they kept the two-chorus solo in there from Illinois.
Jacquette's solo on Flying Home heralded the birth of a new style of tenor playing. It was swaggering. It was sensuous. It was galvanizing. It became the solo that every saxophonist memorized. In fact, some contracts required musicians to play it whenever they played Flying Home.
And I used to play that solo on alto saxophone. Not just the first chorus that I thought was so very musical, but the entire solo. I memorized it. There's only two solos that I memorized. That was one of them. The other was, of course, Coleman Hawkins' famous Body and Soul solo.
The excitement induced by Flying Home also helped popularize the tenor itself. Willene Barton was a young tenor player who heard Illinois Jacquette at the Apollo Theater in Harlem.
Tenor saxophone was the king instrument. Your band was either good or bad, depending on your tenor. That's how important it was. So the tenor man was strong, you had a good band, and then people came to see you. Illinois was the king at that time.
Just ahead, Illinois Jacquette raises the roof at the historic first Jazz at the Philharmonic jam session. I'm Nancy Wilson. It's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to tenor saxophonist bandleader Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquette from NPR, National Public Radio. Illinois Jacquette continued to push the limits of the tenor saxophone in the 1940s. This air check of his playing 105 in the shade with the Cab Calloway Orchestra is the first recorded evidence of Illinois' tenor sax screaming above the bar line. Working with his small group again, Illinois was becoming a big attraction on his own. He brought his band into Billy Berg's swing club in Hollywood, and a one-night gig turned into a year-long stay.
During that year, Norman Granz would have little jam sessions locally, and he'd have me and Lester Young to play on Sunday evenings. Then finally, they had a race riot in Los Angeles, and we were asked to perform, to help raise money to restore the city of Los Angeles. We played this benefit at the Philharmonic Auditorium, July 2nd, 1944. No music, just went up and started playing. Weren't supposed to be recording because there was another record strike. But this concert was recorded.
The jam session format let the audience in on what had traditionally been the fertile, after-hours proving ground of jazz. The place where musicians were free to let loose, experiment, and try to outdo each other with musical prowess and originality. The competition at these cutting contests, as they were called, might range from friendly to downright cutthroat, and the liveliest sessions were sometimes talked about for weeks afterward. 2 years after it was recorded, the first Jazz at the Philharmonic jam session was released. A highlight of the date was Jacquette's classic Blues, Dan Morgenstern.
Oh, that was tremendous. I remember that there was a record store on 6th Avenue in New York that in those days they had the speakers over the doors, you know, and they would play stuff so you could hear it in the street. And there was this one store that kept playing this, and it would always attract a crowd. People would gather in front of the store to listen to this. It was a tremendous thing. You know, it had so much vitality, and then of course those impossible notes that he hit, which caused a lot of controversy at the time.
The record was a huge hit, but there were some who thought these new screaming sounds that extended the tenor saxophone's range by 2.5 octaves were unmusical.
But it was very effective. And then, of course, it was the first instance, really, of overblowing on the horn like that, which later on, in an entirely different context, became a hallmark of the avant-garde, so-called, approach to the tenor. But Illinois pioneered all that, although I'm not sure that he really wants the credit for it. But the way he used it, it built to a climax, and it was very rhythmic, and it really was exciting. And, of course, the audience went wild.
In many of the spirited Jazz at the Philharmonic jam sessions that followed over the years, Jacquette would often battle fellow tenor player Flip Phillips, tenor saxophonist Lauren Schoenberg.
The two tenor saxophone team thing really started with Herschel Evans and Lester Young in the Count Basie band. The tenor battle was just one of the great old my tone is bigger than your tone kind of deals, and or I have more ideas, my brain is bigger than yours, or with someone like Illinois Jacquette and Lester Young, you know, both.
Perdido, from a 1947 JATP Midnight Jazz at Carnegie Hall concert, brings us a tenor battle between the two powerful horns of Jacquette and Flip Phillips. Arguments between both tenor camps as to who had actually won were frequently unresolved. Bob Porter recalled an exchange he once had with trumpeter Roy Eldridge, another favorite in the JATP lineup.
I once asked Roy Eldridge, this was when I was a teenager, and consider the innocence of the question, if you will. And I said, Roy, you were with Jazz DeFilharmonic all those years. Who was the better tenor player? Was Flip better than Illinois? Who came out ahead? And Roy looked at me and he says, nobody ever cut Illinois, Jacquette. Nobody.
As if he weren't already busy enough, in the mid-40s, Illinois accepted an offer to join the Count Basie Band. Basie trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison co-wrote Mutton Leg, one of Illinois' feature tunes.
He added excitement to the band. He had a wonderful sense of humor. And I think The King, which he featured on, and a tune called Mutton Leg, that we had been playing that before. And Basie just chose those two tunes for him to be featured on. And he played the hell out of it.
Basie Orchestra with Mutton Leg, featuring Illinois Jacquette. On Rockabye Basie, recorded in 1945, Jacquette was teamed with Basie tenor player and fellow Texan Buddy Tate.
He was like at home with Basie because that's what you had been studying about. And I'm so happy that I was lucky enough to play in my favorite band, Count Basie.
Illinois Jacquette and Buddy Tate on Rockabye Basie, recorded in 1945. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to tenor saxophonist and bandleader Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquette. Between 1945 and 1950, Illinois and his small groups started to do a series of recordings that were destined to become classics. They included such artists as Sir Charles Thompson, Russell Jacquette, John Lewis, Miles Davis, Fats Navarro, Joe Newman, Freddie Green, J.J. Johnson, and drummer Shadow Wilson. A session on August 2, 1945, put the Apollo Record label on the map.
When you listen to Illinois, like in 1945 and 1946, I mean, he's a contemporary player in the sense that, like, you know, you can tell that he's heard Dizzy and Charlie Parker and all that, yet he didn't lose any of that gumbo or any of that soul, any of that grit that he had from being a Texas tenor guy.
Illinois was also mindful of what the public expected from him.
We had a little bebop in the band, we had a little blues in the band, we had everything that the customer wanted. We had it. Bebop was coming out, but my records were already out, you understand? So I had to play what was on the market then. It was the people that was buying tickets, they were buying to hear me do the records that I had made.
He was one of the first players, for example, who, if you put a solo on record, he would learn the solo and, with minor variations, play it back for an audience. And if you asked him why, he'd say, because the audience expects it. It has become a part of the song. And I think he's very right about that.
One of Illinois' biggest hits was Robin's Nest, written for DJ Fred Robbins. Another hit was the 1949 RCA recording of an original tune, Black Velvet. Black Velvet was later recorded by Frank Sinatra as Don't You Go Away Mad.
I must confess what you say is true. I had a rendezvous with somebody new. That's the only one I ever had. Baby, baby, don't you go away mad.
By 1950, Jackett's influence was so pervasive that while he might not have wanted the credit, his playing had helped to shape a whole new generation of tenor players who would become the honkers and shouters of the 1950s. Many of these performers honked and screamed without the sophisticated musical background and accomplishment of Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jackett, whose roots in the music ran very deep. Bob Porter.
He developed into some of the honking style that was introduced by Lester Young. And developed his own thing on that, leaning on one note for three or four measures, just to build tension in the course of a solo.
Lauren Schoenberg.
The influence of the honking tenor had gone from Lester Young to Illinois Jackett, and then from Illinois to all these other R&B tenor saxophone honkers who really distorted. I mean, here's a guy who could play the hell out of the saxophone, play all the chord changes and all that kind of stuff, who also did extend the range and would honk and bleat and wail at times. But he always used it within the context of his overall musicality. And that was taken and distorted and really gave birth to the whole R&B honkers school of saxophone playing.
Some of the people who came up in his wake, Sam the Man Taylor, and, of course, all the honkers and screamers of the 50s, in a sense, what they did was a burlesque of what he did.
In 1950, Illinois Jackett was 29 years old. Over the next three decades, he would continue to perform and record with his own small groups. The beautiful ballad, All of Me, recorded in 1951, had special significance for fellow tenor player Frank Foster.
I was a soldier in Korea, wanting desperately to be out of Korea and back in the United States and back in civilian clothes. And that also represented freedom from the military, which I desperately yearned for. And I guess for that reason, it had that much more of an impact upon me. That was an example of his entire range of playing. It was filled with emotion, and it was backed up by musical knowledge and good taste and relevancy to the style and the period from which it came. It was really smoking, as far as I'm concerned.
Jacquet and his orchestra on All of Me, recorded in 1951. In the mid-60s, Jacquet took on a new challenge.
My music teacher, Mr. Percy MacDavid, used to take us from high school to the classical department in music, and they would take us to hear the Houston Symphony. And I heard the bassoon and show you about sound. When I heard the bassoon in the Houston Symphony, I never forgot the sound.
Many years later, when Illinois was appearing in Berlin, the first bassoonist with the Berlin Symphony invited him to a rehearsal and suggested that he take up the bassoon because he had the right embouchure for the difficult double reed instrument. Illinois took his advice. Frank Foster.
I always had a great deal of respect for Illinois as a musician who knew what he was about. And I even had more respect for him after he took up that terribly difficult instrument known as the bassoon and played that sucker. I mean, really played it. Oh, man. The bassoon is totally something else.
Illinois played bassoon on this recording of Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight.
Thank you.
Illinois Jacket, playing bassoon on Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. Illinois continued to work all through the 70s, and in 1982, he was appointed Caden Artist in Residence at Harvard University.
After I started teaching at Harvard, I realized that those young people didn't know nothing about the big bands, because that era was gone, and that was a pity, because that's where your universities in music was, in the big bands. All the knowledge that you were going to hear, the harmonies and the great musicians that were alive, the greatest in the world, were in the big bands.
Under Jacquette's tutelage, the Harvard band made progress.
Then I realized that if I could get the students to sound that good, it was time for me to form a big band. Not only for the students, for the world, to hear what I had heard growing up to become who I am. And I wanted the young musicians to know that it is still out here.
That was not a time where big bands were supposed to be successful, and he's managed to keep that band going. It's really amazing. I don't think there are many other people who could have done that.
The music had been very good to him. His idea here was to give something back to the music.
The Illinois Jacquette Big Band is now into its second decade, playing all over the world at concerts, festivals, and clubs. In 1988, Bob Porter produced the big band's first album, Jacquette's Got It. On it, Illinois paid tribute to the big band era.
I like Stumbling and Savoy because it brings back the days that I was in the big bands, that when we went to Savoy Ballroom. So that Stumbling and Savoy was arranged by the late Eddie Barfield, who was a good friend of Eddie Durham. It's a lot of sentiment in that particular number, what you think about those guys.
Illinois' big band captures the spirit and excitement that he generated on Flying Home, making him a strong contender in a battle of the bands. Frank Foster knows that.
When I was a leader of the Basie band, and we did this jazz festival in Marciac, France, Illinois' band went on first. They had the audience grooving so hard until I didn't want to go on behind them.
In a sense, Illinois Jacquette had come full circle back to his favorite band.
If there is a band that exemplifies what Basie was all about, hard swing, straight ahead, right down the middle of the road, big band jazz that hits you right in the middle of the chest, that's Illinois Jacquette. He's got it.
Ever true to his Texas tenor heritage, Jacquette continues to rouse audiences with his driving solos. His velvet ballads still melt hearts, and his powerhouse big band keeps alive a musical tradition whose swinging rhythms still make audiences want to shout, dance, and get happy. Bob Porter, Lauren Schoenberg, and Illinois Jacquette.
If I had one individual on any instrument that I wanted to play one solo for one audience that I knew was going to knock him out, I'd choose him. He simply knows how to do it.
He should be on Mount Rushmore of the tenor saxophone players. There's that feeling of when he plays with his band behind him, that this is what the world was created for. It has that inevitable quality.
I always wanted to be myself. I didn't want to play like nobody, although I wanted to admire the great ones, and I still do. It's just carving something for yourself. And it's difficult. There's so many great ones out there. To have something that when you hear it, you know who it is, and the public knows who's playing, you can't buy that. It's just the luck of God that you get lucky that way. And I really appreciate the luck.
Uh-huh. Our tribute to tenor saxophonist and bandleader Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquet was written and produced by Sally Plaxen. Post-production engineer, Duke Marcos. We had assistance from Manoli Wetherill, Carol Sherrick, Don Lukoff, and Mosaic Records. We'd like to thank Vincent Pilote, Ed Berger, and Dan Morgenstern of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Executive producers, Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. To email us, or for more information about Jazz Profiles, this program, and a listing of future programs in the series, look for NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Support for this program comes from a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's Radio Program Fund and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.
You've been listening to a celebration of the life and music of saxophonist Illinois Jacquet. He passed away in 2004 at the age of 82. Discover more great jazz at NPR Music with our series Live at the Village Vanguard. Live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.